Welcome back to The Six here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herz and Elijah Campbell taking you up to Preds and Kings tonight. Puck drop will be at 9:30 here on 102.5 The Game with full pregame coverage starting at 8:30. Let's talk about the Preds with Jack Fraser of EP Ringside. You know him on Twitter as JFreshHockey. And pretty fitting as we bring Jack in that I think this is the first time we've ever had a guest on The Six actually in Toronto. So, Jack, congrats on that. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I think this is the first time I've ever been led into by Lit. So it's the first time. Yeah.
We actually got to hear that song live at the Stadium Series, which was pretty cool. They were here.
So, I'm pretty jealous of that.
Yeah. Fun times at the outdoor game. And those of you who follow Jack on Twitter, JFreshHockey, see his great player cards and hockey analytics, who's good at what. Let's start, Jack, talking about the newest Predator, the only trade deadline pickup, at least on the NHL side for the Preds, left-handed defenseman Jeremy Luzon, formerly of the Boston Bruins, most recently of the Seattle Kraken. Where do you think he fits in with this Preds group as a potential third-pair guy who can play both sides?
Yeah, I think, third pair is probably where he's going to end up. He's played, I think, both the third and second pair in the past, certainly for Boston. You know, is he a guy that I necessarily would have targeted as somebody to spend a second-round pick on? Maybe not, but there is upside there. You know, he's relatively young. I think he's 24, 25 years old. He's had good defensive results in the past. You know, he's played on two fairly structured defensive teams in Boston and in Seattle, and I think he's kept up well there. You know, the one thing that I think has been a real issue for him is penalties. He does tend to take quite a few penalties. I think he plays a kind of physical style of game that can occasionally translate to some discipline issues. But, you know, fundamentally speaking, I think you're getting a pretty, you know, I would say an almost garden variety kind of just solid defensive defenseman who, you know, plays a little bit aggressively and can maybe shut guys down off the rush.
Who were some of the defensemen that you expected to move that maybe didn't? And also guys that did move like Travis Dermott or even on the higher end side, Nick Leddy, who commanded a little bit more of a price tag that you thought the Predators maybe could have or should have been looking at?
Well, I think the number one guy who I really thought was going to be moved who wasn't was Calvin DeHaan. Mm-hmm. Who plays for the Chicago Blackhawks, who is, I think, you know, fills a similar category in terms of he's definitely a defense-first guy. He's more of a veteran than Luzon is, obviously, and he also probably would have required a bit of retention for most teams in the league. But I think he's just kind of, you know, he's a level up. I think he's a bona fide top four defenseman that I think a lot of playoff teams should have been interested in. But I think, you know, like you alluded to, you know, I think every team that had a slot to fill at the left defenseman spot in the top four pretty much did it. You know, you go down the list of Toronto and Boston and Nashville and St. Louis, and you're pretty much just listing teams that all paid a decent price to bring in a top four defenseman. So I can kind of see how in the musical chairs game, DeHaan got left behind, but he's definitely somebody that I would have looked at if I was looking to add some depth on D.
Talking with Jack Fraser of EP Ringside, and Jack, you're making me sound smart because Elijah and I were sitting right here 3 weeks ago, and I said Calvin DeHaan should be the Preds' number one target. So
can confirm.
Thank you for that. But looking at the Preds' decor kind of bigger picture, obviously, especially on the left side, Josi's pair and Ekholm's pair command so many minutes. The Preds' third pair this season, when it's been the primary duo of Borowiecki and Benning, has been good. When it's been anybody else, it's been not so good. Has that hurt them as much as it seems like it may have when they've had to go deeper than that?
Yeah, which is why I think it made sense to fill things out. You know, I always liked the idea of them bringing in Benning and Borowiecki as that bottom pair, you know, when they did it. I guess probably back in 2020 it would have been. But, you know, when you, I think, commit to adding established NHL players on your bottom pair, you do leave yourself open to, you know, having to bring up some call-ups or maybe some guys who, you know, in my world would be called sub-replacement players, but, you know, otherwise would slot in as depth guys. And oftentimes when you end up doing that, you end up losing the minutes they play. So, you know, even if the price for Luzon was certainly high and higher than I think it's probably fair to say that I would have expected his market value to be, I can at least understand why they would have both decided to address that bottom pair as a priority and also to try to bring in somebody who's young enough that maybe they can be a sustainable solution.
talking to Jack Fraser here at JFreshHockey on Twitter. Fantastic with hockey analytics and hockey analytics graphs, which I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of sports analytics graphs because, Jack, I am a simpleton. I need it put in front of me in simple terms in which I can visually look at and be amused. And you do a really good job of that. And I highly recommend anyone who wants to get into hockey analytics to follow your Twitter account. And one thing that I have a question about, too, is like here we talked about in the one of our first segments here on the show tonight. Roman Josi's value is pretty obvious, especially this year. 18 goals, 59 assists, 77 points. He's like top six in the league in points as a defenseman. But on the defensive side, where is his value analytically, or what do the numbers tell you about him on defensively when making the case for him to be the Norris Trophy winner, especially compared to Cale Makar? Because that's really the two in mind that I kind of see as the two best defensemen in the league right now.
Yeah, I'd say him and Makar, and I think Hedman has also made a good case for himself this season after, I think, a bit of an injured down year. And I mean, you know, when you're talking about a down year for a guy who wins back-to-back cups, obviously you're not condemning him too hard.
Not a bad seat.
I would say that, you know, Josi and Makar, I think, are fairly similar defensively in that, you know, a lot of the time you talk about these guys who are elite defensive or offensive defensemen. You think in the past of Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns and Mike Green, you know, almost always you were giving something offensively, but you were taking something away defensively. I think with this maybe newer generation of talented offensive defensemen, I think they kind of, you know, they obviously, the offense is the attraction, and they're not elite defensive players, but they are above water is what how I would put it. So, you know, I don't think a lot of people would put either Cale Makar or Roman Josi on their list of the top defensive defensemen in the league, or even particularly high on that kind of list. But, you know, I'd say they're just solidly above average. They get the job done. And even if they're not, you know, guys that you would necessarily consider to be stay-at-home players, I think the things that they can do in transition and, you know, to keep possession alive in the offensive zone, it keeps the puck away from their net, which ultimately is, you know, that's a defensive play in and of itself. And there's plenty of players who play a transition game who are not good defensively. You know, I mean, you know, you mentioned Nick Leddy as somebody who changed hands. That's an example of a player who I think plays as a version of Roman Josi if Josi wasn't as talented in the offensive zone or was a lot worse in the defensive zone. But, yeah, you know, both Makar, Josi, they're players who will wow you with their offensive talents, but they're not hurting you defensively either. And I think that that's what makes them especially interesting Norris candidates.
Talking Preds with Jack Fraser of EP Rinkside here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds and Kings tonight at 9:30 out in L.A. Jack, about 2.5 weeks ago, the Preds made a move in their top six. Mikael Granlund went down to the second-line center spot. Ryan Johansson came up to the top line to play with Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg. Since then, the three far and away best offensive forwards on the Preds have played together, and it's been unbelievable. Both even strength and power play, all three of them have scored like crazy. What do you think about the Preds loading up, and is it a viable strategy to go deep in the playoffs that way?
Well, you know, I think when you have a team that isn't necessarily, you know, structured the way that a lot of them are in terms of their star players, you know, I think we can all agree that Philip Forsberg is obviously having a star turn this season. But other than that, you know, I think the Predators are generally a well-balanced offensive team. And that gives you a level of versatility where you can make those experiments. So, you know, considering the fact that they're not, you know, one of the higher tier contenders, you know, like they are really going to have to make kind of an impressive run to go deep in the playoffs this year. I think that you just have to roll with what works and you have to try to gather as much momentum as you can, especially since they didn't make any additions to that forward group at the deadline, like I think some people thought they might. So, you know, honestly, with the way that these forwards, and a lot of them I think have surprised a lot of people this year, I think you really just have to keep rolling with whatever is working for you down the stretch with the knowledge that the versatility of those pieces up front give you the ability to shake things up if you need to.
Yeah, I agree with you on really all of that. I think they're in a good place with it right now. So we've talked enough about the skaters on this Preds team. Let's talk about Juuse Saros, who I know you love. What do the numbers say about why Saros has been so great this year, especially with a really heavy workload?
Yeah, I mean, he's just terrific. He has certainly had to do quite a bit. You know, I don't think anybody would deny that the Predators are not, you know, the staunch defensive squad that they were back in those 2016, 2017 days. They make him do a lot of work, and they have for the past couple of years. And, you know, it takes kind of a special class of goalie to be able to consistently provide strong results. You know, I think it's rarer than a lot of people really recognize. You know, goaltending is very reputation-driven, especially when you're talking about who elite guys are. And oftentimes you'll hear guys come up in those conversations who haven't put up strong results year after year. But Saros, for the past 2 years especially, and I think, you know, going back even further than that, he's been reliable in a way that not very many goalies are. You know, you're really talking about, you know, a very limited list of maybe five goalies in the league who you could reliably count on the way that you can with Juuse Saros. And I think he has made a very good case for himself to be, you know, if not top three for the Vezina, then certainly on a lot of ballots.
Another guy who is potentially up for an award, many folks around here hope, is Tanner Janot. I know you can't quantify physical play as much as you can some of his shooting numbers and things like that, but what do you think about the season Janot's had really fitting in with the change of identity on this team?
Yeah, you know, I think Janot has certainly done, I mean, he's obviously been very impressive and I think come out of nowhere for a lot of people. You know, there's some elements of his game that I think may prove to be somewhat unsustainable. You know, the shooting, for example, I think has driven quite a bit of his success. We'll see if he can keep the high percentage there. But, you know, something that you alluded to, you talked about the physicality numbers and you know, obviously, you know, things like hits and stuff, those can be kind of sketchy stats,
yeah,
especially the way that they're recorded. But one thing that does strike me quite a bit about Janot looking over his numbers, there's a hockey analyst named Corey Schneider who does manual stat tracking where he'll watch, you know, hundreds of games in a season and track everything that happens and who all the players were and everything. And it gives us, you know, stats that are akin to what, you know, the teams themselves are working with, mm-hmm. just really detailed data. And if you look at Tanner Janot's forechecking numbers, you know, there's two kind of main stats that he tracks, like on the forechecking. It's pucks recovered in the offensive zone off of dump-ins, and it's, you know, pressures, you know, which is where an opposing defenseman is trying to break out the puck and a forward puts pressure on that defenseman. And, you know, I'm looking at Janot's numbers. You know, he's in the 95th percentile in terms of recovering pucks in the offensive zone and the 97th percentile in terms of putting pressure on opposing defensemen.
Wow.
You know, those are obviously, you know, elite numbers in that area, and I would be very encouraged about that. And oftentimes the players who do rank super, super well in terms of their ability to forecheck and then just put constant pressure on defensemen on the other team, you know, they tend to end up having very good defensive numbers as well. So, you know, the offense might be very impressive for a lot of people this year, but if he can kind of develop into a very strong forechecking kind of two-way type winger, then I think that would be really encouraging for the Predators.
Jack Fraser is our guest from EP Ringside at JFresh Hockey. And Jack, last hockey question for you, then we got a fun one. But the Predators will go far in the playoffs because blank, based on what you have, and the Predators could flame out based on blank.
Well, I would say that Saros would be the answer to the first one. You know, having a goalie of his talent always gives you a chance. We've seen that time and time again. You know, I mean, the past 2 years especially, I think we've seen some Cinderella runs to the cup that in large part were powered by elite goaltending. And like I said, you know, Saros is one of the top five goalies in the NHL. In terms of why they wouldn't go far, I think they'd probably be a lot of the same reasons that a lot of people were skeptical about the team to begin with, which is the forward group falling down to earth. You know, Philip Forsberg, you know, he has an incredible night last night. He's had an incredible season. He's also shooting 22.7%, which is, you know, if he could keep shooting like that for a long time, we'd be talking about him as, you know, the greatest scorer in NHL history. You know, he's going to fall down to earth a little bit. And, you know, if that snake bitten streak does come during the playoffs, then I think, you know, the bottom could fall out of the Predators' offense just a little bit. You know, if we see some of their offensive players like Granlund or Johansson or Duchesne maybe start to fall back a little bit to how they looked last year, that could obviously be a concern. So, you know, that would be the biggest issue. And I mean, also, there are some really good teams in the NHL this year, you know, and they got better at the trade deadline. So, you know, you could make a very long list of teams that have a good chance of winning the Stanley Cup, but there's only one cup rewarded at the end of the year. So it's going to be real tough for any team that's not in that top category to really make a deep run.
All right, Jack, lastly, and the most important question here. On your Twitter account, your the profile picture, we have a guess that it's Patrick Laine, but we're not 100% sure. It's like 80% Laine, 20% Drill.
So, yeah. So, Patrick, it is Patrick Laine.
Okay, knew it.
He took a picture, or well, he didn't take a picture. Somebody took a picture of him walking to a game looking like Jack Nicholson. And I think somebody pointed out to me that it reminded them of the popular Twitter user Drill.
Yes.
And so I applied some filters onto it to make it look like it. And then I think my plan was to go with it temporarily and then switch it back to my old one. But I actually lost my old one. So until I can track it down again, I'm stuck with Patrick Laine Drill.
It's hockey Drill. That's amazing.
I'm so glad you were right, Elijah. Okay. I'm glad we came out with that because we were 100% right. Jack Fraser is on Twitter at JFreshHockey. He does great job with player cards, analytics, numbers for EP Ringside. And Jack, tell everybody how they can help you out too with your Substack and other ways they can get more of your advanced stuff.
I will. But first, I will mention, you know, for people who don't have spend nearly as much time on Twitter as I do, when you have enough followers, you start to get like a lot of spam. Like you get a lot of bot accounts trying to DM you and get your information. And a lot of the time, they will be pretending to be attractive women, and they will say, "Hey, handsome, I saw your profile picture, and you were so attractive." And, of course, it's Patrick Laine wearing sunglasses. So that always makes me laugh.
That's a good bot filter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can catch my work at EP Ringside. I just wrote a big article breaking down, you know, grading every team's performance at the deadline. And, you know, I do a lot of player breakdowns and things like that. You can follow me on Twitter at JFreshHockey. On top of posting hockey stats visualizations, I also every day will post a little two-minute highlight film of you know, whoever the top performer that previous night was. So, for example, I posted a little compilation of Philip Forsberg's plays from last night when he scored 5 points. And if you like the stats visualizations that I alluded to or that you've seen me post on Twitter, if you would please consider subscribing to my Patreon. For $5 a month, you can access absolutely everything.
That's great. Jack Fraser at JFreshHockey, thanks so much for joining us, Jack.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We'll take a break, come back, talk some more Preds before the game tonight against the Kings. You're listening to The Six here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.